more stories online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see, I did it written in paint where you just paint it.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Of course, you can write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com, or email your story to us. Send it to Tony, T-O-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. So lots of ways to get those to us. Be sure to press subscribe. Leave some reviews if you like the program. Become an EPP at ghostpodcast.com if you like the show. Get those extra episodes and help keep us on the air. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hi there.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm going through the process of comparing and contrasting phones.
Oh.
Because I'm sitting here kind of frustrated with my iPhone because it's about two generations back. It's a 6. And it, for the most part, works fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I do a lot of our video stuff on there and capturing stuff here and there on it. And then I'm having issue where it's like it's not telling me accurate data that's on the phone. I'm trying to delete stuff and it still shows that it's there and I can't seem to get rid of it no matter what I do. And it's some sort of a glitch and I'm trying all the things I'm finding online and I'm ready to hit my head against a wall. And it just shouldn't be that difficult.
No.
So I'm like, well, I've had iPhones for a while. Should I stay with them? I know the apps that I use and I like the apps that I use, but I don't know. And I'm comparing like some of the Galaxy stuff online. And I don't know. Just as soon as I'm ready to jump ship, I just looked at some pictures like just 2 minutes ago, comparing like a picture taken on a current gen iPhone versus that. And I like the iPhone pictures better.
Well, and that's the main thing.
And that's the main thing. Yeah. It's like, I don't want to give up a headphone slot because that's another thing that went away with their let's make the world buy our shit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. I may just find a workaround on my current one and just not spend any money at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That might just be the best solution.
I'm going to make mine last as long as it possibly can.
I think I might do that with mine longer. I mean, it does work when it works. It's just the data thing is driving me nuts because it's like I got to get rid of some stuff so I can take more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know I will find a way around it, but it's just it should be a simple click on done.
Yeah.
Not let's spend 3 hours researching how to do a workaround because it's not working right.
Right.
Anyhow, the ghost of the data on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's jump into our first caller and hear your story. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. I had tried to leave a message the first time, but it kind of got messed up. So please discard that, and I'll try and re-record this to get my story across. So my name is Greg. I had left a comment on your guys' Facebook Live feed for Halloween. I work at a Railroad Museum. I volunteer there. We're all volunteer members. So we work our regular work week and then go down there and work for free. And, you know, because we enjoy it. We love it. I've had quite a few experiences down there, but I try to talk to other members about it, and they just kind of look at me like I'm crazy. So the museum is housed on former Northern Pacific Railway property, and the old depot is a beautiful brick building. It was built in 1911. However, it's a second depot for that town. The original was a wooden depot, but in 1911, Northern Pacific Railway came through and they upgraded all of their buildings and their facilities on that particular line. So it's a beautiful brick building, sandstone accents, green wooden window frames, absolutely gorgeous. Look it up online, what a Northern Pacific Railway depot looks like, and you'll see what I mean. They're gorgeous. Just across the parking lot, there is, on the other part of the property, there's the freight house. And it was built in, I believe, 1925. And originally it was where, you know, they would store dry freight, and they had a cold storage room. And when our organization got on the property in the early 90s, they basically ripped the back half of the floor out down to the dirt in that building, the freight house, and converted it into an engine shop. So we have concrete flooring, an inspection pit, and track. And we have a 1902 steam locomotive that sits in there that's being restored. It'll be the first time it's ran since 1953. It's about 90% done. It's pretty exciting. So I guess my first story goes, I was walking out of the building one night after everybody had left. My fiance was sitting in the car getting it warm. It was kind of a cold night. And I had used the restroom and I had walked out of it and I was shutting lights off, making sure everything was locked. And, I had walked down, there's a hallway from the front part of the building where the front door is, and the break room and the mechanical officer's office and bathroom and all that. And there's a steel, kind of looks like a fire-rated door, but anyway, it's down at the end of this hall. And then you open it up and you're on the upper platform and there's stairs going down to the floor where the steam locomotive sits. Well, I had opened it and made sure lights were shut off and everything, and I had closed it and turned around, started walking down the hall, and I heard somebody say, "Hey, Greg." And it sounded like my fiance. So I jumped and kind of turned around because I thought she was in the car. And I looked around and I said, "Yeah, what's going on?" And nobody replied. And I looked in the bathroom. I looked in the door there in the shop again and checked the office. And I didn't see anybody. So I said, "Well, you know, I just must be tired." And started walking up to finish locking up. And so I got everything shut down and I walked up to the front door, and the light switches for the little area up front are right next to the door. So I just turned those off and was about to step through the door, and I heard someone say, "Hey, Greg." But this time they were a little bit more adamant about trying to get my attention, more urgent. And I looked out to the car and I saw Alicia sitting there, and it was in the same voice as my fiance, and she was in the car. And so by that time I locked it up and hightailed it out of there and went home and told her about it. That was pretty much the only time I've ever felt threatened. I mean, there was one other, but most of my experiences down there have been fairly friendly. That's one of my first stories. I guess I can tell you another one real quick if you have time. But so we have a Christmas event down there, and our museum president is usually there during that event. And I was the last one in the rail yard, and I was walking through, locking gates up, checking cars, making sure no lights were on, handbrakes were set, everything was safe. And I had my my high-vis vest on, and I had my flashlight and my keys. And so I was walking and shining lights on cars, making sure everything was okay and there's nobody in them. And, you know, and I shined my light over towards one of our passenger coaches. And I saw somebody in bibbed overalls walking away from me. So I never saw the face. Our museum president wears bibbed overalls occasionally for special events like that, where there's going to be a lot of public, to, you know, kind of try and get in the mood and add to the ambiance, I guess. But anyway, I had seen him and I had wanted to know how we were doing, as far as numbers were, attendance and, you know, money coming in, because we are a nonprofit and it's our biggest event of the year, that pretty much pays our bills the rest of the year and lets us restore equipment. I'll call him Frank, so that there's, you know, no issues there. But, anyway, I kind of said, "Hey, Frank, and wait up a minute. I got a question for you." And I kind of did a light jog to try and catch up with him. Now these cars, these passenger coaches are 85 feet long. And he was almost to the end of it where the steps are to go up into it. And, I was about midway down the car when he had turned left, and grabbed the handrails and stepped up onto the car. And I said, you know, "Hey, Frank, wait up a minute." And so I ran up there, and by the time I got to the steps and was climbing up one side, he was going down the other. I got to the top there, and he turned left, and he was on the ground, and he had turned left and started walking down the car. And I hopped off of there, kind of both feet landed on the ground, and I said, "Hey, Frank, wait up." And I caught myself because I looked down, and there was nobody there. The cars were kind of aligned in a way that, there was a switch and there was a line of passenger cars that that particular coach was sitting on, all the way down to the switch, a little bit past it. And then the other track that intersected with that, track, at that switch had some freight cars on it, and they were butted up to the point where there was not a whole lot of room for somebody to squeeze through. And if it had been Frank, it wouldn't have been very possible or very quick for him to crawl underneath the car. And besides, that's something that we strictly forbid for any of our crew members to do, is crawling underneath or between cars, even if they're parked, because you never know what's going to happen. So I looked up and down, and I looked down towards the other, to the right, down towards the depot, and I didn't see anybody, and it was quite a ways. If he had been there, I would have seen him walking that direction, but he wasn't there. And so I walked up into the depot, kind of a little bit shook, and I walked up to him and I said, "Hey, were you just outside?" And he said, "No, I was in here counting our money for the day and, you know, our attendance." So I kind of walked away stunned because I didn't quite know what to think. So anyway, those are a couple stories that I have. There's a lot more, but I hope to get to share them at some point, and I hope you guys play this. So anyway, I love your guys' show. Thank you so much for what you do. And I plan to be an EPP very, very soon. So I love you guys to death. Happy holiday season, and thanks.
I like a good story from the rail yard.
You know, people that love trains love trains, and I think you and I are in that category. I mean, all of our houses have either been within earshot or viewing distance of trains and purpose.
And we have an entire elaborate model railroad in our... I'm kidding, we don't. We do not do that.
But. No, we don't. But what I'm getting at is that I could see people that loved trains in life, not being able to really stay away if they had up close access to them.
Sure.
After they die, I could see a lot of ghosts coming back to still ride the rails or be near them. And, you know, I totally get it.
It's a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the same thing of like why I'm fascinated with like old ocean liners and things like that. I don't know if it's like just like giant machinery is like kind of spooky to me.
I don't know.
Or what? But maybe even before Titanic, I was obsessed with trains as a kid. I was in like two or three, four, five-ish. That's the only books I wanted to get from the library. I didn't get like, I mean, I would get like maybe a Berenstain Bear book, but then I have like eight books about trains.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like Thomas Train. I always thought that's too little kid stuff.
Well, that wasn't around when we were little. That came like.
Was it?
The generation. Was not it after? The generation. My younger brother, he was all about that, but that wasn't around when we were little.
I mean, the books I got were like literally of the rail yard and you know, like, here's trains. And I just, I don't know, I loved looking at them and they're just, I don't know, there was something kind of spooky and neat and I don't know. And then I found Titanic and then I was obsessed with that from there on out. But I still, you know, there's still like that kind of neat, weird thing about the old trains and all
that. When I was really little, I had a train track behind my house and I think that's what made me start really being interested in trains. And, you know, I don't know things about them, like different types of engines and stuff. I just know that we've lived near railroads for at least, you know, 8 years now. And between our last house and this house, I will still stop if I hear a train coming, stop and watch the train go by. Doesn't matter what I'm doing unless I physically can't, you know, stop. But I still just am so, I don't know the word.
Fascinated.
Yeah, fascinated.
When my first house when I was little, we lived until I was about four. There was an abandoned rail line across the creek, like directly across, like within like 20 feet of the creek would have been where the rail line. Now it's a walking trail. When I was a kid, though, it was just this abandoned rail line that still had like some tracks on it. No trains could run on it because it was like halfway ripped up. But I remember going and hiking on it when I was really little with my parents or my aunt who lived near it too. And it was always like, oh, let's go find the rail line and just go walk. And we'd walk it and you'd see all these railroad ties everywhere. And maybe that's kind of where some of it began, just the fascination. That maybe that's the beginning of all of this and the whole like abandoned and creepy and spooky is walking the old abandoned train line.
Could be,
you know, because I mean it encompasses a lot of the things we talk about. So I don't know. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing? This is Nick. I'm up here in Connecticut. Just wanted to call and talk to you guys about a happening that happened when I was younger. Of course, over the span of about 4 years, all within my grandmother's house. Where we live in Waterford is an older part of Connecticut, so there's naturally the Indian burial grounds and the Revolutionary War massacre brought on by Benedict Arnold in the area, but nothing that had happened to me really had any, seemed to have much to do with anything in the past. So 4 years old, we moved into my grandparents' downstairs apartment, this in-law suite with my mom and I. And her bedroom had a connecting hallway that led just to a wall that had her bathroom, shower, as well as the washing rooms. And until then, I hadn't really experienced much in any home. But one night, I decided to go in there. I needed to get something in it. I turned the corner into this room, which you really have to take a 180 degree once you enter the doorway that goes to the hallway to get to the end of that hallway where the washer and dryer is. And it seemed almost as though a black mass manifested in that back hallway and came towards me. Now, it didn't seem malicious from what I remember, but granted, I don't remember what happened for the rest of that day. To this day, I don't remember that. And I never really talked to anyone about it. It was a very scary experience for me. But in the predecessing months of us living with our grandparents, there was a crawl space underneath or in the closet in our in-law apartment that went underneath the main part of the house. That's where my grandfather and grandmother kept old antiques, a lot of things from the floods in Canaan, Connecticut, when they had the flooding and their family had to move. And I always felt oddly comfortable, but knew that there was something there with me. And I would always end up in that area for what seemed to me to be only minutes at a time. But I would come out, and my mom or my grandmother would have been looking for me for the past hour. And I thought I was only in this room for, you know, playing with the old knickknacks and toys for, you know, 5-10 minutes. It really, you know, never really hit me as a child. And, you know, this went on for probably about 2 or 3 years until I was 7 years old, when my grandfather, who was very large and in charge, as well as needing oxygen and other items, he had severe diabetes, which caused his legs to start giving way, and he passed. And I remember the funeral very well. My cousin Jen and I were very close at that time. My cousin Jen had a countless amount of experiences with the paranormal as a child in her home at the bookstore in our town, which my uncle, her father owned. You know, there'd be times I'd be sitting over her house and you would hear her talking to someone. You would hear voices talking back. And then when you'd go to find her outside in the backwoods, she'd be by herself. But I, as well as her parents, knew that we had heard another person responding to her, another little girl. But anyway, she gave a beautiful eulogy and sang for my grandfather's funeral. And that day we went home to my grandparents' house. And at this point, I had moved out of my grandparents' home and with my father after a nasty little bit of a custody battle. But in that time, nothing had happened when I wasn't there. But when I went back, I stayed in my mother's old room, our childhood room in my grandparents' house, just for somewhere to stay while I was up for the funeral. And the next morning, I came downstairs, which opens up into a dining room area that has two walkways into the kitchen area. It's like a galley kitchen with a smaller breakfast nook at the end on the second doorway from the dining room. Now, as I walked down into the dining room, all of a sudden, my grandfather peeks his head out from around the corner where he would sit at the head of the table at the breakfast nook and just said, "Hey, buddy," and went back in. And as I turned the corner to see who I had thought was my deceased grandfather, he was gone. Now, when I had talked to my grandparents about this, my father's parents and my grandmother, my mother, no one believed me. They thought I was seeing things. They thought I was young. I had a vivid imagination, but I knew what I saw. And now I'm 27 now, and about 2 years ago, I started working for my uncle at his bookstore in Nyanic as well, and started really getting close again with my aunt and my uncle. And my aunt is a Wiccan, and she believes in the paranormal and everything about it and the spiritual side of things. And so I knew that she would be a good, comfortable person for me to talk to about this. And as I finished my story, she turned to me and said, "You know, your cousin Jen saw him the next day, too." And it was almost a scary realization that what I had seen, that my grandfather, who had passed the day before, was, in fact, there to say goodbye to me. But it also felt good to know that I was not going crazy and I was not alone in seeing him. Since then, my cousin and I have both had countless amounts of paranormal experience. I actually worked with a paranormal group called Project Wolf Paranormal out of New London, Connecticut, and the guys I worked with love when I go, because no matter what, when I was there, we would get manifestations, a good amount of video, EVP, and voice phenomenon, so it was pretty cool. But thanks for listening to my story. Hopefully you guys like it, and maybe if you want to contact me back.
There you go.
So I wondered if seeing his grandfather was the first experience he had.
I don't know. It seems like he may have a life filled with more than just that.
Well, he does now, mm-hmm. and he was pretty young when that happened. I just wonder if that was his first experience, and that just kind of opened that door to where now he has a very, very active.
What I'm wondering about is, did he have experiences prior to that but not know that they were experiences? Like, the grandfather was a defining one because mm-hmm. he knew who it was and all that. But until you have an experience where it's like, oh, yeah, that person's dead, mm-hmm. and you're young, you know, maybe one of those things like, yeah, saw a ghost today. You know, but you don't really, doesn't really register on the scale of like, this is odd.
Sure.
Or just not common.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good question.
No. Thank you for sharing that that story with us. 855-853-4802, our number. Hi.
Hi, Jenny and Tony. This is Courtney. I am calling from Kentucky. This is my third time calling in. My last call, I started to touch base on my aunt's haunted house in Nashville. It was the story about the cat that actually spoke her name in front of many witnesses and then immediately threw up. Now I would like to kind of keep that going and tell you an experience that I had while I was there. My mom and dad and I were staying the night. We were all in her guest room. My mom and dad were in the bed, and I was asleep on a love seat that was also in the guest room. My mom was getting ready for bed, and she just laid down. She says she turned over trying to get situated, and standing beside me, laying on the love seat, standing beside me was a little boy. And when she first saw him, just her immediate reaction was, there's a child in the house, you know, maybe a neighbor child or someone had got in. The way she describes him is that he was in black and white, that she saw no color. So everything besides no color, he looked to be a solid apparition. She then asked him, what are you doing here? And he quickly said to her, I live here. At that point, of course, it really scared her, made her very nervous, and she rolled over and got on the other side of my dad. What I asked her afterwards is, what about me? You know, I was laying there, and she said that she knew that he wasn't going to hurt anyone. Also, when my mom and I were asleep a few nights later in the upstairs bed, by this point I started to realize that there was something going on in the house. Before then, I think they tried to keep it from me, you know, not wanting to scare me, but I could just feel that energy. So I was a little bit nervous, so I wanted to sleep with my mom. So we were laying in the bed, and hovering above us, there were two shadow figures. And the way they were hovering, it's like their bodies were perfectly aligned with ours laying in the bed. They were like horizontal to us, which was so scary. You could see the outline of their shoulders, their necks, and their heads, and they were right beside each other, the way one was taller than the other. I can remember that, and just the fear of pulling the covers over your head and breathing hard and starting to sweat. I know I'll never forget the way that felt. Being at my aunt's house was so confusing now that I look back on it, because it's confusing to think of all these different spirits in one house. Maybe it's common and I just don't know it, but it's hard for me to understand why so many different ones were in this house. Therefore leading you to think, was it something more sinister, you know, just betraying itself as a little boy to my mom, and then as two shadow figures to us. There are more stories to further explain this, but I guess that's enough for now. Thank you all for listening to my stories. I love your podcast, and I appreciate you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I think it is fairly common to have more than one spirit in a house, but I also think it's pretty possible for something to be portraying itself as many different things until it's something gets attention.
Mm-hmm. Would that be a good thing or a bad thing that would be portraying itself as different things?
Usually it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
That tries to, well, I'm going to try and be a little boy, or I'm going to try and be a shadow person. Whatever I can be that's going to get attention.
Could you be a good thing and just use it as an attention grabbing maneuver, if you will, to get the attention of like, no, I'm really a good thing. I'm just going to be 40 different things till I see what sticks.
Well, from what most of our stories have said, it seems like the good things try different tactics, not different
forms.
Yeah. You know, they're like, I'll play with dishes, or I will open, you know, and close doors.
I'll drop the cat off the stairs.
That's just you. I'll do little things, you know, until something gets attention. But
sure.
It's not necessarily, I'm going to try and be that, yeah, or try and be a shadow today. And I don't know if it's, you know, they're not able to, or if they're just like, you know, that's not what they do.
Sure. I don't know, but I think you're right. I mean, that's really what how it's gone,
mm-hmm,
in terms of stories and all that. I wonder, you know, we talk about residual energy of situations and things, not even where things die. But I always think back, because I was joking about the cat off the stairs, because when I was two.
Before you knew it was really
I knew it was really bad.
And you are not an animal.
I love cats.
Yes.
Our cat gives me a big hug every time I go and see it. Literally, the cat hugs.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest thing, but literally paws up around you. It's like, hi, nice to see you too. But when I was two, we had a cat. And this was in that first house I was just talking about. And I wanted to see if the kitty could fly. And I'm pretty sure I didn't know better. I'm going to stick with that.
Well, little, two is really little.
Yeah, but I remember taking the cat to the top of the stairs, and it wasn't super high, but it was enough, you know, where the cat lands, it goes, you know, mm-hmm, and then runs away. I attempted that. I took the cat up there, held it over the edge, and boom, and I remember looking down as the cat, you know, descended in the air to the, uh-huh, ground, and the cat just ran away. I went, oh, can't fly, and then I hear my mom, Tony, what'd you do to the cat? And the cat was fine. Nothing was broken or anything. She was just, you know, pissed, and, you know, she was a great cat too.
Yeah.
But
The cat was pissed.
Yeah. But I wonder about things like that where, you know, where kids do strange things or dumb things to, you know, pets because they don't know any better, you know, everything from pulling the tail to dropping them to whatever. But probably a little more in the lines of traumatic to the pet, like dropping it off a stairwell.
Yeah.
If situations like that reoccur then, because I'm sure it was a fairly traumatic moment for the cat,
mm-hmm,
like falling and boom. But what I wonder about that is, does it ever play out where, like, now the people who own that house these years later, do they just sometimes hear the sound of a cat landing in the stairwell?
Who knows?
When, you know, just... And, you know, not that, I mean, the cat's dead now because this was, you know, 30 some years ago, but does that happen? You know, because sometimes you hear stories of like, well, we hear the sound of this animal or a dog barking or a cat making it. Like, could it be something as simple as that and not just like the animal revisiting, but just that moment, that energy being replayed again and again?
Well, a lot of residual hauntings are traumatic moments,
yeah,
and that would be very traumatic for a cat.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I don't know how I got on that, but
yeah,
old house making a strange comment. I don't know, but I don't know. Just a thought. Just throwing it out there. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. That wraps up today's episode of the program. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an EPP, extra podcast person. Sign up for that at our website, ghostpodcast.com. You can support the show directly through the website by being an EPP. $5 a month is all we ask. You sign up for a full year, get 1 month free, and claim yourself a bunk bed belt. Or you can even go through Patreon now, too. Those options there start at $5 a month as well, and there's some other upgrades over there if you prefer that platform to be an EPP and support it at whatever level you like. There's a $10 and a $20 level a month as well with some extras there. So check it out and do whatever suits you. Just help us keep doing this thing called Real Ghost Stories Online. It all starts at ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.